Hey guys, welcome back to the number one combat sports and fitness podcast.
I'm Joe Turner.
And I'm Jack. So I wanted to talk about Khabib. So recently, well today actually, it's been talked about because Dana released an interview, I believe it was with Brett Okamoto, and they were mentioning different stuff like Khabib, Conor McGregor, things like that. And they mentioned that Dana is going to see Khabib this week. It's the, you know how they've been rumored that he's, I'm going to go have a chat with Khabib. And
he's going to Abu Dhabi, isn't he?
Yeah, magically, he's going to sit down with him and you know, fondle his balls a little bit and tell him, oh, you got to fight, you got to fight.
Tickle his beard, you know what I mean?
Tickle his beard, of course. And then there's been a lot of questions around, like, well, if you meet Khabib, like, are you actually going to do anything? He seems pretty adamant. He's like, I don't want to fight.
Do you remember what he announced? Oh, yeah, he won't fight unless his mom says so.
Yeah.
And all those memes that literally had a guy on the phone calling Khabib's mom.
Right. I just, like, I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know. I really don't think it's going to happen. I think Khabib's set on not fighting.
Well, I think the bigger question is who? Who's it going
to
be?
It would have to be a winner of, like, Conor and Dustin and maybe a fight after that.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. Like, everyone kind of wanted the GSP thing, but that's probably never going to happen.
I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Everyone wanted the Tony and Ferguson thing, but now Tony's lost
twice in a row.
That's not going to happen. He doesn't want to fight Conor again.
No.
Poirier is huge, but he's not... Again, he's not pay-per-view huge. Like, if he wants... Okay, it's like this. If he wants... If Dana wants the mother of all money fights, he has to go with Khabib versus Conor again because Conor is the fucking poster boy of the UFC. His fight with Donald Cerrone, which he dominated in the first round, had more pay-per-view buys than Khabib versus Gaethje.
I don't know. I mean, I think Dustin is pay-per-view, but it's hard to set that up because of how it went last time.
Yeah.
The Conor works... because it's the McGregor factor, being away for a long period of time. There's a storyline to that that you can feed into it. It would be the number one pay-per-view event ever.
Yeah.
Right? Especially with the UFC. I just don't see it happening. I think Khabib, there's no GSP lurking out there, you know, that they're going to surprisingly put that fight together. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Khabib's going to say no. I think he's going to be like, I'm sorry, Dana. I keep telling you, but I don't want to fight. And Dana's going to have to figure out what to do to sell other fights and perhaps move on to Khabib's training partner, Islam Makhachev.
Yeah.
And perhaps start putting a lot more promotion and emphasis on him in the lightweight division.
Well, there is the idea that, you know, isn't... Poirier versus McGregor in Fight Island?
They'll be in Fight Island, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Khabib's going to be in Fight Island.
He is, but he's going to be there at the same time. He's going to be a corner man. He's going to be a corner man. And I believe the fight's going to be on the prelims. So
yeah,
it'd be interesting because the thing is, the interesting thing about Fight Island is they've got to be there 2 weeks before and they've got to stay there 2 weeks after. You're spending a month on Fight Island, right?
Yeah.
You know... Like, it was funny because Dan Hook even put on Twitter, he said, well, what are some things I can do on Fight Island? I'm struggling because, you know, he's trying to think, what the fuck am I going to do for a month on Fight Island? You know, the 2 weeks before a fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. All your energy is focused on one thing. 2 weeks afterwards.
Yeah.
You want to party, you want to see your friends, what the fuck are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, one thing I've got to steer towards is that Conor and Khabib are in the same building. Okay, when we watch that fight, by the way, it'll be the main card will kick off at 11. Okay, so the fight's going to be at 12. My eyes are going to be glued to that screen, and I'm just going to wait for that second when Conor and Khabib finally make eye contact with each other. And if Conor wins, he's going to be, where is that little mutt? Where is that little weasel? I got a feeling he's going to call out Khabib. And then Khabib's just going to jump the cage again.
I think if those days are ahead of him, but...
Or there's going to have to be like a barricade of security blocking off the two.
Or probably they would probably have to be separated for sure. I mean, especially with those UFC embedded where they're traveling around watching the fighters. It'll be interesting if they cross paths because Fight Island isn't that big. It's big for like the amount of events they put on, but it's not big, you know. They're going to bump into each other. They're probably going to be separated. It'd be interesting watching that tension between them when they're so close to each other and there's a lot riding on a rematch to happen. I think a lot of people are looking for that, especially Dana. I mean, Dana might even, you know, potentially and intentionally put them in very close proximity to each other and try and stir up some bad blood. I don't know.
Close proximity would be Khabib here, Wolf Security, Connor. Because you can imagine the tension. Would Dylan Danis be there with him?
Most likely, I would say so, because it's... no, he won't, because Dylan, I'm pretty sure, can't train with Connor because he's got a bum knee. Not a bum knee. He hurt his knee, then he got surgery, and I think it's been 6 months since the surgery, and obviously every knee surgeries and knee injuries are horrific, and you've got to wait at least a year or a year and a half until you can do back to your full-on contact sparring. So the only thing I've seen from Dylan is he's doing a little bit of light sparring, a bit of boxing and things like that, just as his rehab, but he's not doing rolling, and that's what Connor would have him for. He'd be doing rolling him and doing like defensive Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I wanted to talk about, because we were speaking about Dana, and Dana put out that Shogun, after losing to Big Paul Craig, a Scottish fighter, was definitely going for a hit for Scotland when he beat Shogun, I believe for the second time, after their fight and they drew. I thought Paul won. But we all thought that that was Shogun's last fight, and that was certainly what Dana thought. Dana went, Shogun's done. That was his last fight. I don't want to see him in the octagon again. And then recently we'd seen a special on Twitter and social media. Shogun has retired, and we were like, yay. And I actually put out, I'm glad that Paul Craig was his last fight, because they got to have that draw, and then they had a second fight, and then that was a nice end to the story, right? Turns out Shogun's not retiring. Shogun's manager came out and actually said, we've had a chat with Dana. We understand why he thought that. Turns out Shogun's not done. Shogun said, you know, from how much experience and love he has for the sport, he really wants to not leave the sport on a bad note. I believe he wants one win and then he's out and he's done. I think Dana would be happy for that for him, and apparently that's what happened. His manager and Dana had a good chat with Shogun, and it looks like Shogun's gonna stay and be employed with the UFC for one more fight. Hopefully Shogun can get the win and then he's off, riding off into the sunset.
No one likes to finish with a lose. No one really wants to end their career with a loss.
The one that's bad that comes to mind is Michael Bisping.
Yeah.
Gets the title, defends against Dan Henderson, loses against GSP, should have stopped there.
Yeah.
Then comes back 3 weeks later after
against
a devastating
Gastelum,
loss.
Shanghai, Calvin. Gets KO pretty badly.
It Very was, badly.
And, you know, he had those barrage of eye problems. He talks about it all in his book, Losers Never Quit. Winners Never Quit.
I wanted to see that, but it looks like a really good autobiography. It's
phenomenal.
I mean, Bisping to this day is still dealing with so many injuries. He just got his something fixed with his neck.
Yeah.
I think he was getting an epidural done on his neck. He's got severe neck pain from wrestling.
Yeah, he's had knee replacement surgery.
Both knees.
He's lost an eye to the sport.
He's given limbs to the sport.
Yeah, like, he's literally, but that's probably... You know, he's probably going to go down as one of my favorites of all time. I mean, I've got to give him that, you know. But now, earlier on, we talked about... just a couple of minutes ago, we talked about Shogun and it was going to be his last fight. Who would you like to see Shogun fight last, though?
It's difficult because Shogun's getting old. Like,
yeah, where does he sit in the rankings, do you know?
I think he's unranked.
You think he's unranked?
I don't think he's ranked. I think he's unranked. He's around 40 years old. And around that time, you need to start thinking retirement setting. So I don't know how that goes with Shogun, because Shogun's been a crazy, crazy aspect of MMA, certainly in the Asian circuit. So I think with Shogun, with the amount of... I mean, let's not forget, you know, Shogun had the light heavyweight belt.
Yeah, he did.
And John Jones took it, was the one that took it from him. And then John Jones had the belt for a very, very, very long time. But Shogun's been a huge proponent of the sport, and it's a shame. I don't want to see him leave like that. But I was happy that he would lose to Paul Craig, and then he's done.
Well, right? The reason why I think he wants one more is because of his last five fights, he's lost 2-1, 2-1. So he's apparently, according to the source, he's currently ranked 43 in the light heavyweight rankings.
Yeah.
So unranked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really give him a ranked fighter. So something like that really isn't high enough to have be a main event, but probably main card.
I don't know if they'll do that. I mean, they might put him on the main card. Just out of being, like, out of respect for what he's done and the amount of blood he's spent in the sport. However, he's most likely getting put on the prelims.
Yeah.
Most likely. I mean, maybe, like, the end of the prelims, just to open up the main card, it'll be Shogun versus... I don't see him finding a no-name because it is still Shogun. He's still dangerous. I mean, very dangerous. Let's not forget he got a draw against Paul Craig in his second last fight, but... I see him getting given a good name, unranked fighter in the light heavyweight division, and it's going to open up the prelims for the main event of some UFC card, most likely UFC Fight Night or something like that. I see that happening. He's probably going to fight somewhere around July or something like that.
Fair enough. Yep. Anyway, since we're on the topic of last fights, Diego Sanchez, he's also got one more fight left in the UFC. Mm. But here's the thing, though. Remember who was his last fight to? I know he lost. And it wasn't in good fashion. It was quite a nasty loss as well. And
I don't know why I'm forgetting. I know he had that win against Michel Pereira.
Yeah.
And it was quite a controversial win.
Yeah.
I cannot remember who he lost to. I remember all the memes that came out afterwards.
His last fight was Jake Matthews.
Okay.
Yeah, and he lost via decision. UFC 253. Now, there was a lot of talk about it, like, what is it? Everyone was just kind of saying, you know, I feel like it's over, Diego Sanchez shouldn't do it anymore. Because the dude is one of the first, he's been in the game since, wasn't he the winner of the first Ultimate Fighter?
There was two winners, because I believe it was... Was it welterweight or middleweight?
Yeah.
I think it was middle. It was middleweight and
welterweight.
So
Forrest.
No. It was middleweight and light heavyweight.
Yeah.
Because Forrest Griffin won.
Yeah.
And then there was Diego Sanchez.
And then the guy who Forrest Griffin fought again, I always forget his name, but he got the contract as well. So three of them got contracts, and Diego Sanchez was one of them. So he's been fine ever since then. You know what I mean? Show me a list of fighters that have been fighting for the at least the same amount of time as Diego. It is a very short list.
It's a very, very short list. And most likely, if they have been fighting that long, they've most likely already left the sport, only in Bellator or something like that.
Yeah.
Or they're at one of the number one for the amount of victories, the number of wins and things like that.
It's
rough with Diego because he was the first UFC fighter I watched.
Yeah.
I watched him and I saw his highlights and I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, not even that, but he was the if he was the first fighter you watched, what fight was it? Can you remember? Because the first time I saw Diego Sanchez fight,
don't remember,
was against Clay
Clay Guida.
That's it, and that was a fucking war.
I don't know if it was Guida. I think it might have been before that. I don't really know.
And then there was the other one where he fought Giblet Menendez. Do you remember that fight? That was a dog fight, ladies and gentlemen. That was an absolute...
It's hard to remember them because his fight with Gilbert Melendez was very... That's a tongue twister now. Gilbert Melendez was quite... Giblet.
You remember that? Giblet. The reason why I say Giblet was because when Reebok released
they got his name wrong?
Yeah, they got him Giblet, not Gilbert. And he was God. Like, fuck. And all the memes came out about it.
That's fucked.
Yeah, Reebok.
That's bad when they get the name wrong.
Yeah.
They did that with Steph Curry.
Really?
Steph Curry was going to get a deal with Nike, I think. I believe it was Nike. And they actually brought out the shoe to show what it was going to look like with his name on it. Mm-hmm. And they didn't change the name. They just had a template and it was a different basketball player's name on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And instead of calling him Stephen Curry, they called him Stephen.
Oh, no.
And he said, right, fuck this. And now he's with Under Armour. And now Under Armour is, and The Rock are huge.
Yeah.
Huge brand deals. So they it's hilarious.
Two of the most lucrative deals in sports branding, pretty much.
Definitely, because whenever you walk through Rebel Sport or things like that, which are Australian companies, you walk through them and you see all the Rock stuff and all the Under Armour.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's managed to get like his tattoos put on clothes and things like that. It's huge. Them, even the shoes, they have like a Reebok running shoes which track your movement and not Reebok, Under Armour that track your movement and things like that. And obviously a little bit of a luxury item, but they're all like promoted through The Rock and things like that, and Steph Curry, who are huge proponents. I mean, one in the movie industry and sports, another one would be basketball. So it's insane when these smaller companies at the time take these big athletes and rise so much.
Yeah, I mean, like, sports brand, like if you get sponsored by a brand like Nike, Reebok, Puma, Adidas, Under Armour, like you make bank.
Israel Adesanya, he signed with Puma last year.
Yeah, wasn't he the first fighter to sign with
first
Puma?
Combat athlete to sign with Puma. Not they don't usually Puma doesn't really go for combat athletes, to be honest. But it's interesting that Israel, I mean, to be fair, if you just like their stuff, you like their stuff. The same way a skateboarder, I mean, skateboarders make bank now with their shoe deals, whereas in the past they were making nothing. They were making no money on those brand deals.
Yeah. Well, it's because the name that's associated that comes with those fighters. Like, okay, let's say not because of the take, what's it called? Take actual fighting records aside, okay? Take whatever the champions, like, who do you believe are the top five or top three, maybe, if you can think of, the most
marketable?
Fighters. I got to say Israel Adesanya is definitely one of them.
I'd say that.
I've got to say that Conor McGregor, obviously, whatever that man plus is his face on, he will sell.
Most likely.
yeah. Who else? Maybe John Jones?
Maybe. John Jones used, I believe he had a Nike deal and he lost that. I think maybe Jorge.
Yeah.
Jorge, maybe Nate Diaz, but Nate Diaz has his own apparel company and I don't think the Diaz army would maybe like that. Probably think he's selling out. I think maybe Jorge, GSP, you could maybe have maybe Davison Figueiredo.
Maybe in terms of marketability.
Alexander Volkanovski has Engage, I'm pretty sure, which is a brilliant fightwear company. Yeah. That's brilliant. I mean, that one's already sponsors Adesanya and all those fighters as well. Kai Kara France.
It's not cheap, though, I'll tell you that.
No. Not cheap, though. I want to buy one of their shirts, to be honest. They look really good. I don't know who else, maybe.
Shout out to Engage, sponsored the last night podcast.
You might be able to do maybe like a Francis Ngannou. Francis Ngannou, I could see you being marketing in the future. I just think he has scalability.
Yeah.
I think you have scale. I think with Conor and that, there's like a benchmark with like the minimum amount of money you've got to pay them.
Yeah.
I think Ngannou's got less, but he has a huge spike in potential.
Yeah.
I think it'd be massive because imagine if, I mean, I think Stipe is the greatest heavyweight of all time, right? Okay. You can bring in Fedor, if you want to say Fyodor, what the real pronunciation for his name. Fedor gets a bit weird because when, you know, he came in at a different era and it was, you know, over in Asia where there was a lot of quite lucrative and a little bit sinister deals going on with, you know, who actually won the fight, who got paid and things like that. So it gets difficult there. Do I think Fedor's a brilliant heavyweight champion? Of course. But I think Stipe is the greatest. His resume is the best.
Yeah. He's forever going to solidify this year.
Exactly, when he actually fights Francis. Now imagine if Francis won. If Francis won and you already got him right before he's going to fight Stipe with maybe like a Puma deal or Under Armour, or maybe Under Armour, right? He's chilling out with The Rock. He's shooting a few basketballs with Steph Curry.
Oof.
He's messing around on the heavy bag, throwing it about. Then he fights Stipe. He beats Stipe. Don't know if it's going to happen. They already fought before. Oof. It probably is going to go around the same way. But if Stipe lost to Francis, Francis gets sets up for a John Jones fight. He would be really good for marketability, I think. I think he's like an underdog when it comes to marketability.
Okay. Interesting.
It might not be one that probably comes to mind, but I think Francis would be huge.
Okay. Interesting. So, kicking off the UFC fights for the year.
Well, it's been weird without having fights. It's been 3 weeks. I've been crying myself to sleep. So we've got Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar. Which is this Sunday on the... So there will be the Saturday, the 16th for Americans. Us, Sunday, the 17th.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for that. That's a brilliant stand-up fight. They've both got incredible boxing.
I was actually watching Anthony Pettis versus Max Holloway in the car.
They released the full fight, yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. And one thing that Joe Rogan noticed is that Max likes to stand front. Normally when people stand, they stand side on or from the side. He likes to stand side on. He loves to trade hands. That was a really good fight between him and Pettis.
Very, very good
and
fight.
Then I watched Calvin Kattar just smash through Jeremy Stephens. Like, when he knocked him out, literally just blood was literally just gushing from his forehead. Mm. And I honestly believe that we are going to start off the year with a bang. It has to be a stand-up fight.
I think it has to be a five-round war as well. I think that's a five-round war.
You've got a guy who's got one of the greatest gas tanks ever, has a record for most significant strikes thrown during a fight, Max Holloway, Brian Ortega, versus a man who's just has mad precision and mad power, especially for a featherweight.
It's funny that you bring up the Brian Ortega fight because he actually, have you seen it when he actually goes over to Brian Ortega and picks up his hands?
Yeah.
And he actually shows him how to block punches during the fight.
Really?
Yeah, it's insane.
Is that good? Yeah.
I mean, he's that good. You talked about his gas tank. Amazing, amazing cardio.
Yeah.
I mean, most likely. I mean, he's Hawaiian. Probably likes to eat. He said that. I love to eat. So making his way back down to 145 is probably a struggle. He's probably got excellent cardio because he's working so hard. Yeah. Now his striking, and he's very creative. He's so young for the amount of people he's fought, and
he's only 29.
He's only 29. He's only just turned 29. I think 29 at just the end of 2020. So he's turning 30 at the end of this year.
Yeah.
Which is insane because, I mean, it's weird to think that when Calvin Kattar's come into the sport a little bit later than Max Holloway and now he's about to fight him when there's not a huge difference in their age, right? Mm-hmm. Calvin Kattar's got brilliant boxing. Excellent. He's probably got one of the best boxing in the entire UFC, to mm-hmm. be honest. I think he's a brilliant, brilliant boxer. It's whether or not I think neither one has an issue with chin or vulnerability. Yeah, I think they're both very durable. Max is very durable. I mean, that's usually a Hawaiian thing anyway, and Calvin Kattar's significantly shown he's very durable too. I cannot see a KO and I cannot see a submission happening. I really think it's going to be a five-round war and it'll be a decision swaying to Max. I know Max will do volume and Calvin will have more power and maybe more significant strikes, but Max will have more overall strikes just because of the amount of volume he hits with every round. It's insane.
Yeah, yeah. He's a very, very well, very, very skilled fighter as well. I mean, it really comes down to it, really. It's going to be a test of grit.
I think so.
Yeah, that's really what I believe. But the winner then is most likely to go on to fight Volkanovski.
Mm.
What's your take on that? Because, what is it, Ortega won his last fight and then I think he called out Volkanovski.
That's going to be settled most likely maybe April or May or something.
Yeah. So, like, it's a little bit of a strange position. Like, Volkanovski, you know, who's he going to fight? Is giving Max the rematch for the trilogy a little bit greedy? Or do we want to see Ortega versus Holloway 2 and then the winner of that maybe gets to go on to fight Volkanovski?
It gets difficult. What route are they going to take? That's what I'm curious about.
It
gets difficult. I really do think that UFC really cares. It really cares how you win your fights.
Yeah.
If Holloway was to starch Calvin Kattar in the first round or the second round, brutal KO, or vice versa, right? Calvin did it to Max. I think he would probably jump that. But if it's a decision, most likely Max is going to have to fight another person. And if, let's say, Brian was to lose against Volkanovski, I would see a rematch with Brian and Holloway. That would be a huge fight because it really was a big, like, big inflection point with Brian Ortega's career and his skill level. It really did. When he lost to Holloway, he was one-sided and he was dominated. He left for 2 years, shaved his head, came back a new man, and he'd leveled up several times. It was a huge inflection point for growth for him. I'd love to see that fight if Holloway was to pass Kattar.
Yeah.
I see that happening more so than him jumping the queue because I don't think Holloway will KO Kattar because they're both so durable. I think they're just going to trade for 5 rounds and it's going to be a really, really good fight. And it, right underneath it is the co-main, and then after that is David Zawada versus Ramazan Ameev. So, yeah, that's a really, really good fight to watch as well in the welterweight division. So, yeah. Really, really good fight. Now, I want to talk about Aljo.
Okay.
Aljo's been making moves lately because finally it's getting set up for UFC 259, I think. And UFC 259 has a lot of people, it's got 3 title fights. So it's got Jan Błachowicz versus Israel Adesanya. It's got Peter Yan versus Aljamain Sterling. And what's the third one?
Nunes versus Anderson.
That's it.
Like, ooh.
Huge.
That 2020 ain't fucking 2021 ain't fucking around, boy.
It's funny how the UFC has set up like 10 different fights in 2021. Yeah. Right? He's got 10, apparently has like 10 events ready to go.
Yeah.
What's Bellator done? What's ONE Championship done?
Yeah. Nothing.
Nothing.
I just don't think they got the star. I feel like because UFC's prospered for 2020, it's created the stars, you know what I mean? It's created even bigger stars. I feel like there are more stars now in the UFC than there are across any other like combat sports division.
I think you got a point there. The Asian stars in ONE Championship might play to a different target audience. Bellator has huge moves in the light heavyweight division. Yeah, they could set up a really good Grand Prix. I don't know. Is it maybe money? I don't know. But I'm very interested in what the UFC is putting out there. I think it's really good. And I cannot wait because it's the third time it's been scheduled. Aljamain versus Peter. And I mean, first it was, I think, Aljo's issue. Then it was Peter Yan. He pulled out because of visa issues. Couldn't get a visa sorted. Didn't have a place to train. Now Jan has got his visa sorted, and now he's going to be moving with his coach from Tiger Muay Thai to he's going to join American Top Team.
Oh, American Top Team. Okay.
So he's going to join ATT for his first defense.
Which is one of the most well-known gyms in the world.
It's probably one of the top 5 most notable names out there. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, what's your take? I mean, one thing I love a lot about Aljamain Sterling is that he's come from very, very... what's the best way? He's a very, very humble fighter.
Humble beginnings.
Do you remember that? Do you remember that
the promo that they put out? Yeah. It just showed that he came from a dark place when in his childhood.
Like he had a very, very
difficult issue with his family. Yeah.
He loved. I think he was the eldest of all siblings.
Yeah, and he had to become the father. He had to look after his siblings where he had an abusive dad, and obviously had to protect himself because he, you know, becomes the man of the house as well. And I think, like with any kid, you probably have to deal with bullies and things like that while caring for your own family, like the father figure. Really difficult. And I think when he found like jiu-jitsu and martial arts, it's really played a really big point in his life. Now he fights through Matt Serra's Brazilian jiu-jitsu gym.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Matt Serra is a big proponent in Aljamain Sterling's success. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I mean,
Because I know how good Matt Serra's jiu-jitsu is. Obviously, he's a phenomenal jiu-jitsu artist. Yeah. I know how good his gym is as well. Because
they came from he came from a Gracie background.
That's right. He so started his own gym. Do you know Greg Hardy?
Yes.
When Greg Hardy fought George St. Pierre, George St. Pierre gave him such a hard time on the ground, but he also gave George...
You mean Dan Hardy?
Yeah, Dan Hardy. Sorry, yeah, Dan Hardy.
Different Hardy. Different UFC fighter.
I got it mixed up. That's a shame for me because I'm reading his book right now. Dan Hardy. So what he did was he spent 2 to 4 weeks in Matt Serra's gym in his camp, and they just literally just roll with him every day to prepare him for GSP. And one thing that they sort of invented on him was what they called like the rubber band guard, where they would just put him into a submission and he would just not tap at all. His like limbs were that incredibly hypermobile, which he talked about. Because when GSP fought him, there's literally videos of him just putting him in an armbar and a Kimura and an Americana, and GSP is just straining to just to get that hyperextension on the elbow, and then Dan's just like, just chilling there, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, and then George St. Pierre did a podcast with Dan Hardy, and he talked about the hardest thing to do was to get that man. Trying to get that man to tap. Mm-hmm. He just had like that rubber band guard. He said, I never tried so hard just to submit someone, and it just did not work. He said it was the most frustrating fight for him. Coronavirus. Bless
Excuse
you.
Me. Bless I could you. Feel that coming for like 30 seconds. I was like, just fucking hurry up and sneeze.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so.
You got to sneeze, but you got to.
I know, yeah. I mean, Aljo, he obviously comes from humble beginnings, and I'm sure Jan does as well. We don't get as much information through Jan because there's a little bit of a language barrier. I mean, certainly on Twitter, he can speak perfect English. But I cannot wait for that fight. For some reason, I think the bantamweight division does not get enough credit.
No,
I don't think it does. And I think, you know what? This might be a controversial decision because Jan is the bantamweight champion, I think Aljo beats him. I really think Aljamain, the way Aljamain beat Corey Sandhagen so quickly, I think Aljamain's kickboxing made you sneeze. I think Aljamain's striking has got a lot better since fighting, I think it was Marlon Moraes, which he lost to by a head kick KO. But his ground control and his ground game is very, very good. And I would like to see how Jan would actually have to, bless you, how Jan would actually have to deal with that. You know,
he just gave me the Jack Rona.
Yeah, probably. it would be interesting to see how Jan would actually deal with the ground control and the ground game of Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah. What's the best way to put it? Like, if he wins, he becomes Jamaica's first champion.
That would be insane for history, insane for his own, insane for his family.
Yeah,
it'd be that'd be incredible because we already know that, you know, it's like special moments like that which write you down in history and things like that. So, yeah. for a bantamweight champion, first UFC champion from Jamaica.
Yeah,
that would be insane.
It's not going to be easy though because this is going to be Peter Yan's first title defense. Because he won the title over Jose Aldo, and he just made it look easy. He was just plummeting Jose Aldo on the ground. He was actually covering his head. And remember, we did a podcast literally just right after that fight.
We did, yeah. And he just hit. I mean, he hit Aldo with these brutal body shots on the ground, and you could just see Aldo just go. I mean, that fight should have been stopped so quick.
We argued that was probably a late stoppage.
I think that was a late stoppage for sure. It went on for too long and it should have been done right away. But there's not too many issues. Like, you can't do much sometimes about these things. It's certainly not the fighter's fault. But Jan dominated Aldo for the vacant strap.
Yeah.
And this is going to be his first title defense. I think there's a lot riding on Jan. There's a lot of pressure on Jan because it's the third time it's been scheduled. Aljamain has been almost like the Tony Ferguson, the bantamweight division. He's been, I mean, certainly underrated. And Jan has got the vacant strap, and he needs to put his foot down and show he is the king on the top of the hill.
Yeah,
there's so much pressure on Jan, and not as much on Aljo.
Yeah,
there's not as much on Aljo, and I want to see how Aljamain, you know, threatens Jan with his ground game, and I want to see how Jan deals with that and deals with the pressure of kind of proving he's the bantamweight champion. First defense is probably quite big for a champion of any division. I think that's huge.
Understood. So Dana's boyfriend is fighting...
Which one? Which one? Because Connor's fighting too soon.
Yeah, he's like a... he has a very polymorphic... No, what's it? What's it called? When one man has multiple women. What do we call that?
I know it's poly something.
Yeah, poly something. Fuck me. Sorry. So you know what I'm trying to say?
I know what you're trying to say.
Dana's got multiple wives. He's got multiple boyfriends.
He's got multiple fighters. He's got his hands. His hands on. I mean, he's got Conor. He's moved over to Sean O'Malley, and now he's got Khamzat. So Khamzat was supposed to fight Leon last year.
Yeah.
Got fucked up because of COVID. That was an issue with Leon getting COVID. He got severe symptoms. I think he lost about 12 pounds, which works out to about maybe 5 or 6 kilos, which is huge. And then he's got to have to put that on, actually be able to go to work and work in the gym, which is difficult because currently the UK, I think their third major lockdown, mm-hmm. not allowed to go out for, well, most things. Then it came into January. We were really excited for that. That was supposed to be the main event of the January 20th card, I believe. That got cancelled. Khamzat has pulled out because he's having issues because he also had COVID. His lungs have not recovered. And then Leon still wants to fight. However, no one's really coming up to the plate. So it's going to get rescheduled a third time per Dana. And they're most likely going to get set up maybe around... February or March.
Yeah, my money was going to be on March.
It has not been scheduled yet, which is interesting because before it got scheduled right away, it's not been scheduled yet. So Dana really wants the fight. I would like to see the fight too. It's definitely a weird fight for rankings wise.
Yeah, because Leon Edwards has got to prove himself because he was unranked. He lost his ranking. And then, all right, he said, okay, I'll take Khamzat Chimaev, you know.
He was kind of... coerced.
Yeah, you know what I mean? He's kind of forced into it.
Coerced is probably too gentle a word. He was kind of like blackmailed. He was like, you'll get your ranking back if you take my boyfriend Khamzat Chimaev. So
it's like Dana White's like is acting as if he's some kind of schoolgirl who's using his boyfriend to beat up the guys he doesn't like.
He's pimping Khamzat out. Yeah,
you know what I mean. You know what? Hats off. Khamzat, you know, he was probably one of the biggest rising stars of 2020. So hopefully he continues on this hype train because we like him.
I like him a lot. And it's an interesting matchup because Khamzat, everyone talks about Khamzat as just so strong. And he's an absolute... I've watched him train. You know, there's been a few training vlogs.
We've watched his montage of his knockouts, especially the infamous adjusting his mouthpiece before he gets in the rear naked choke.
Insane. Everyone says this guy is just so... He's so strong. I mean, he's only been doing this properly for 3 years or something like that. So since I think he's very talented, he's obviously very physically gifted in terms of his athleticism. I just don't know how that's going to go with Leon. I think the wrestling could be an issue for Leon, but Leon's experience, his footwork and just his striking ability. Leon's got very fluid striking. It's a very interesting matchup. I just don't know why it hasn't been set up yet.
Yeah.
Why hasn't it been scheduled in March?
Oh, I think that they're just sort of holding on to it because, you know, it's happened this long and then they've got all these other things to deal with. Like, we got all these fights coming up first. I feel like they want to get that stuff out of the way then focus on, you know, Khamzat versus Leon Edwards. Speaking of massive fights, all right, next week... Next Sunday is the big fight between Poirier and Mystic Mac. The Diamond versus Mystic Mac, or Diamond versus Notorious, or whatever name you want to go with. But however, there's a lot of speculation and debate about whether or not this fight should be for the title. What are your thoughts?
I don't think it should be for the title.
Agreed.
I think it should be a contender fight. It's a title contender fight. Whoever wins... out of McGregor and Poirier should be one to fight someone else for the vacant title because I don't see Khabib coming back. I think Khabib properly needs to retire, like, say, Dana. Stop. I don't want to fight. It's for the vacant strap. And then once the person gets the strap, then they can call out Habib, because then they're actually saying, look, I am the champion. Come to me now. They actually have something to say. You want your belt back? Come to me. Then Habib can be a two-time champion. I think that's how you could set it up. I mean, Conor versus Dustin, whoever wins out of that, could fight maybe the winner of maybe Charles and Justin. And then whoever wins that gets the title. I don't think it should be I don't think it should be for the vacant strap out of McGregor and Poirier. I mean, they're certainly very far up there, but I think it would be disingenuous and not really fair to the rest of the people in the lightweight division, especially when you got Rafael dos Anjos coming back. You know, you've got Dan Hooker versus Michael Chandler.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really interesting names out there, and I think it would be unfair to all the other contenders that have been put on hold because Habib's been so dominant. You need to have Habib step down, have the vacant strap, just like how they did it when Henry Cejudo stepped down, came out of the testing pool, and let Aldo and Jan fight for the title. Same way I think McGregor and Poirier should fight for the title contender, and then they wait and watch Oliveira versus Gaethje. Whoever wins out of that fights them. Ooh. It's definitely an interesting thing, because it's almost like the slower the pot boils, the more kind of people that are drawn to it, because Gaethje has said all kinds of things against let's not forget Tony as well. Tony's definitely in there, although he's had a little bit of a bump in the road, but cannot expect him to go anywhere soon because he's so talented. But Gaethje's got his own storyline with Conor, because he actually called out Conor and said, look, fight me, you know, you're a horrible father. You know, he said a lot of very dramatic things against Conor. Not like Conor hasn't said the same things against other people, but you can set that up. You know, and Charles Oliveira is, a huge contender. Huge contender. After beating Tony, who was going to fight Habib, I mean, like, 5 or 6 times, something stupid.
It was the most cursed fight in UFC history. It's never going to happen. You know what I mean? It was never going to happen. And one thing I was thinking about was...
Do you agree? Do you agree that it should be for the... Just like a title contender?
No, I don't feel like... No, I don't. Because it's just not fair on...
Oh, so you do agree. You do agree it's for the title contender, not title...
Oh, not for the title, but for the title contender?
Yeah,
of course. What's the best way to put it? It's just unfair on everyone else.
Just for, like, Dustin to have a loss against the champion.
Yeah.
Beat Dan Hooker, who is, I think, number 6 right now?
Yeah.
Maybe at the time he was number 5, I don't know. Yeah. And then Conor is away from the sport for a considerable amount of time.
Yeah, and before he affect him on the rankings.
Yeah, they like to look
him down 1 or 2 spots.
They like to look after him.
Yeah, that's why I'm just saying, you know, in terms of fairness for all the other fighters on the roster, I don't know. But the one big question I really wanted to ask you, just to jump off topic, because Dan Hooker's ranked sixth.
He's sixth.
So what happens hypothetically if Michael Chandler beats him?
Because he's lost. So Michael Chandler hasn't had any fights in the UFC, and Dan Hooker lost to Poirier, who's going to be fighting McGregor, who then, if he beats McGregor, would have to fight someone else to get then fight for the title. I think Dan Hooker would have to fight maybe a loser of maybe Gaethje and Oliveira or McGregor and Poirier. That's only fair.
I mean,
for him to climb back up.
What happens if Chandler wins, right? And he calls out McGregor. Or what if Chandler wins, Conor wins, they go at each other?
I don't see that happening. I see Chandler fighting a loser of one of these big title contender fights, because the UFC doesn't want Michael Chandler to have an easy way up to the top. That's why they've given him Dan Hooker.
The UFC is kind of betting on Chandler to lose against Hooker.
They certainly are.
He welcomes it, though.
He does welcome it. He's certainly very confident, and any fighter should be. If you're not confident, then you probably shouldn't be in there. But they've definitely given someone to challenge him, especially with height and reach, which makes it very difficult, you know, to go for a double leg or a single leg against someone who has such long limbs for sprawling and things like that to post up and strike with. Gets very difficult. Like, you know, I've been seeing recently, a lot of people is wondering, is the motivated McGregor going to turn up? Is Conor McGregor the real Conor McGregor from 2013, 2014, and 2015 to actually show up the motivated one? I mean, Conor himself has actually put out a post and said, Conor McGregor is just one of those guys to say, I would butcher the Alvarez McGregor and I'd butcher the Aldo McGregor too at the same time.
He claims that you put up on our Instagram saying that he's going to beat him inside 60 seconds.
Yeah.
Ooh, so the moment that bell goes off for McGregor and Poirier, everyone's going to have a countdown 60 seconds.
It's definitely there is a method to his madness because Poirier does this in a lot of his fights. The first 60 to maybe 120 seconds, he's feeling himself out. He gets very nervous before fights and then he calms down and he starts to get into his groove, right? That's why when he fought Conor McGregor last time, he did not get in that groove because he was so overcome by a lot of anger, a lot of the overall pressure, right? I don't know. I think what Conor's hinting at is he's going to try and take Poirier out before he even gets in his groove. Yeah. He's already nervous and he's going to play on that. I think that's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
I mean, something that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's one
was
more
the
point.
New was the new Deadpool movie, right?
It was literally just announced today.
Yeah.
So this is just the next point. This is just a point we can just finish up the podcast on. But yeah, the new Deadpool 3 is going to be announced. Has been announced today, and it's going to start production at some point this year. And I wanted to say, what did you think of the Deadpool movies? I personally loved the first one. Thought it was fantastic. But the second one...
had some good points. I would have liked if maybe they stopped at one and then maybe fed him into the MCU or something like that. Doing three draws things out. You know, they start to be... not as interesting because you've already fleshed out their storyline and things like that. It's better if you had... I mean, I'm no Marvel director, but I would have had the first Deadpool, let it sit for a long people. Everyone's asking, where's Deadpool 2? Where's Deadpool 2? Then you say, bang, he's in MCU. He's going to be fighting with Black Widow and Spider-Man. Boom. Or a Spider-Man Deadpool movie.
Yeah.
They would be like, holy shit. They would lose their shit.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I'm not super interested.
Oh, you're not super interested? Well, I'm kind of hyped for it because Deadpool 1 was like one of the first ever R18 movies. I mean, there's three really, really, really good Marvel R18 movies. First one is Punisher.
Yeah, the older one.
The older one. Fucking love that movie. Second Deadpool, first Deadpool, I thought was fantastic. Third one was a movie called, what was it? Spawn, believe it or not.
I've seen that. That was Spawn with Michael J. White.
Yeah.
He's a proper martial artist.
Yeah.
He's a proper, he's a proper black belt.
Yeah. And it's actually a pretty good movie. That's what I thought. I mean, it was pretty gruesome. I mean, it was the effects were a little bit...
It was from a long time ago.
Yeah, it was from a long time ago. But we need to make more MA15 movies, dude. We need to make more MA15 superhero movies.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I felt like everyone was kind of hungry for an MA15 superhero movie, then Deadpool came along.
No, you forgot Logan.
Logan. Logan came after Deadpool.
Okay.
Fine. That's why. But Logan's... okay, top four. Logan's definitely up there. Fantastic movie. But, you know, it shows that they do work. Again, Logan further solidifies why that they do work. Mm. You know, Venom was supposed to be R18, but it never was.
It should have been. I would like to see maybe a director's cut or something like that because... a lot of stuff has been taken out, and there was rumors that a lot of stuff had been a lot of scenes were improvised, and it looked very they managed to turn out a decent movie, but a lot of it was very pulled apart and pieced together. It didn't look right.
Yeah, true. Anything else you want to quickly finish up on?
Nah, that's all. Good. That's all.
All good.
Thanks for listening, guys. If you really enjoy our content, that's brilliant. We really appreciate it. If you could do us a big favor, subscribe, like, share, comment, all that good stuff. Most important is subscribe, however, so that you help us out and we're going to help you out, because when you subscribe, you press the notification bell. Every time we post a clip or a podcast or an interview with an important individual or professional, it means that you're going to get a notification and you are the first one to watch it and like it. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening to the number one combat sports and fitness podcast. Thank you very much. I've been Jack.
I'm Joe. Take care, guys.
Bye. Catch up.